Australia on the Triple M network. Triple M! Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Boner.
Hello, folks. How are you? Brand new day. Welcome aboard. 133353 is the... All right, yes.
What?
I'll do the social media thing.
The darting look he just gave me, Australia. Facebook, looks could kill.
Facebook, the Night Shift on Triple M. You can tweet.
Tweet.
That's it. At MMM Night Shift and email nightshift@triplem.com.au.
Do you hate reading that out? Is that why?
Stephen Senatiempo.
Yes.
Who does the nighttime program nationally before me, was telling me earlier today that you sent out a very strange tweet. About crying yourself to sleep over coffee or something. What the hell?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Well, look, maybe he's a recent follower, but on Instagram and Twitter, I joke a lot.
He follows you. He admitted he follows you, but you don't reply. So you're brushing him.
I'm just busy, maybe.
Either that or he's obsessed, like all the other blokes in your life.
All right. Look, I just said, Luke, I don't know if you do this. Do you ever waste money because you don't have taste bud satisfaction?
Yeah.
That's what I'm calling it.
Yeah,
so
okay.
On the weekend, I bought a coffee.
Yeah.
So excited. First one all week. Treat yourself. It was rubbish. So I bought a second one to rectify the prior dissatisfaction.
You drink coffee here.
I hadn't last week, so it was a big deal.
Mm.
And the second one was rubbish too.
Mm.
That's what it was about. Do you do that though? Do you buy something, it tastes horrible?
Yeah, but
horrible.
I don't go writing about it. What makes you think that people want to care about you and your coffee?
But that's what Twitter is. I got
Why?
A lot of likes this and responses.
This is the thing about you and your generation. We don't care. We don't care about your coffee or about your smashed avo on Sunday brunch. Why do people...
It was a funny observation and comment. That's what Twitter is. And if people don't like it, they don't have to follow me.
But why do people feel as though the world wants to hear about you being unsatisfied?
I don't know, with coffee, that is. But they're interested. So that's what Twitter... Luke, have you been on Twitter?
No.
You know the show has a Twitter page?
Yes, I don't.
You know I work very hard at it every single day?
Yes, good on you. It's what you get paid unbelievably well to do.
Oh,
133353 is the telephone number. Just a funny observation, folks. I bought a mixed fruit salad down at the supermarket last night. And I said, Jess, we can share this because she likes this sort of thing. She likes fruit salad.
This sort of thing.
And I've just looked on her desk and she's finished it all except for the rock melon.
Well, you told me.
And I know exactly why. I know exactly why you've left the pieces of rock melon, because I told you when you were away in Lebanon...
There was a listeria outbreak.
I think you're getting listerical about that.
I am listerical about it.
There was a listeria outbreak involving Australian rock melons, and there was a warning, but they fixed it now, and I told you that they fixed it now.
Yeah, but I'm off it now. You've ruined it. You've ruined it for everyone. Also, did you just tell me that because I know you like rock melon and you purposely don't want me to eat the rock melon so that you can eat the leftover rock melon? Is that what you're doing?
You saw through my evil plan. I want to know from our listeners out there, we're going to talk about what goes in the fridge and what goes in the pantry. But I also want to know, have you had a bad experience with one particular food and to this day you cannot cope with it? 133353, what's yours?
I didn't eat cinnamon.
Say it again.
Which I love, cinnamon, for a year because I don't know if you remember, several years ago there was a thing online called the Cinnamon Challenge.
The Cinnamon Challenge, yes.
And I love cinnamon. To me it tastes so sweet. And my brother said, oh, come on, do it. It's a teaspoon of cinnamon. It won't kill you. All these people can't do it. And I thought, oh, easy. I love cinnamon. Well, it's very spicy when you eat it in a full teaspoon. And I couldn't breathe and I started choking. It was horrendous and I couldn't touch it for a year.
I've seen people do the cinnamon
challenge.
It's
really dangerous. No one at home do it. Do not try it. It's not fun.
It looks really awful.
Horrible.
My sister was a very competitive swimmer and she lived off egg flips for a long time, high protein. So we had all these egg whites left over. And Mum used to make trays and trays and trays of meringues to take to school for treats.
Yep.
I ate myself so sick of it, I cannot even think. Just thinking about a meringue now makes me want to puke. And I can't eat pavlova now because it's got meringue.
Really?
It's got meringue.
How many years have passed? Have you tried?
I would have been 10.
Still to this day?
To this day, cannot
What's eat. That, what, 100 years ago now? How old are you?
And the other thing I can't eat 133353, is there something that put you off a particular food years ago and to this day you can't eat it? We used to have a really, really generous choco vine. It was unbelievable. The chocos it gave us, hundreds. And so we had chocos with every meal.
How did you have them boiled?
Boiled.
My grandparents have one too. Boiled, they're nice.
Or sometimes fried with butter and salt and pepper. But we had chocos with every single bloody meal.
So now you're done.
I'm done.
Do you know what I heard? And I don't know if anyone out there can confirm this. Apparently the McDonald's apple pies.
Used to be choco.
A choco, not apple. Is that true?
The University of Newcastle, back in about 1975 or six, did a study on McDonald's, and they found that the apple that was in the McDonald's apple pie was actually choco, but with an apple sauce, because chocos really don't have a flavour.
Yeah, versatile.
Yeah, and it was a study done by the University of Newcastle all those years ago. Now, I understand that that's not the case anymore.
So now they're real apples.
I'd like to know what's in a chicken nugget, though.
Oh, nothing good.
133353 is the telephone number. The Night Shift.
On Triple M.
Yeah, now the rumour about the McDonald's apple pie / Choco Gate, we'll call it. They're going online now. See, this was a long time ago. This was mid-70s when this was about. And I'm sure that it was the University of Newcastle that did some sort of a study. We're just trying to find it. It was a long time ago. But looking online now, Jess is telling me that it was an urban myth. That I'd like to talk to anyone from McDonald's that's in the preparation area of this food. Tell me, is there any truth to the rumour about the choco replacing the apple in the apple pie? I promise we'll keep you anonymous. If you like, you can email Jess first, because all the lines are full right now. But email us, nightshift@triplem.com.au. But I'd love to talk to anyone involved at McDonald's. Was there, I don't believe it is now, but was there any truth in the choco replacing the apple? And what are some other truths behind the foods that we eat and take for granted, eh? Jess, do we really want to go down this path?
I don't know if we do. I mean, I've heard bad things about the way they used to do nuggets at Macca's. When you brought that up, I felt a bit sick. But apparently now it's chicken breast.
But what was it?
I heard it was just all the leftover bits of chicken, like the feet and the tongues. Sorry to anyone eating.
Lips and arseholes, that's what they say. that's what they reckon in cocktail Frankfurts. That's what they say. They reckon you don't want to know what's inside a hot dog.
The same thing I've heard, Spam. Does anyone...
Oh.
Devon? What is Devon?
What is Devon? But it's good. Devon is good.
Oh, I don't know. There's some weird chunks in there, Lukey.
And what's that chicken roll? You know, you know it's round? It's... What is it?
I don't know if we want to know. Just eat it. Close your eyes and pray.
And one more before I go to my calls. One more. What is seafood extender?
Crab meat.
It's not.
It's definitely not.
It is not crab meat.
A lot of colours, X's and Z's in those ingredients.
What is in seafood extender? 133353. Sorry to keep you waiting, Graham. You were in Townsville. Good day, mate.
How's it going?
I'm really good. How's Townsville this morning?
Yeah, not too bad. I just was on the way home from work.
Okay. What do you do?
Night fill at Woolies.
Okay. What's up? What are we talking about?
Well, I just heard you talking about the peanut butter and saying it's butter, and just had the general reminder to you that baby oil doesn't actually have any baby products in it.
Well, that's true. That's true. You've been waiting all this time for that gag.
Yeah.
Thank you, Graham. Well done. Sorry. Seriously. Yes. G'day, Steve. Steve, talk.
There you go.
Yes, Steve, go.
Just wanting to let you know, if anyone has had seasickness tablets, what goes into the actual sickness tablets?
Yeah.
I used to work in a dairy company.
Yeah.
and it's actual cow's afterbirth, which we freeze, mince up, and then put it into a liquid and dry it into a powder, and that's one of the ingredients in leek thickness tablets.
Are you sure?
Sure, do you? Been making it for 16 years.
Is this the sort of tablet that you take when you're car sick as well, motion sickness?
Yeah, all that type of stuff, yeah. It's one of the ingredients.
What is it again?
It's called lactoferrin, or cow's afterbirth.
Cow's afterbirth.
Yeah, when they're finished calving.
And who collects this cow's afterbirth?
The tanker drivers that used to pick up the milk.
They'd
pick it up and we'd freeze it for them.
But what about when the cow gives birth to the calf out in the middle of a paddock?
Yeah, the farmers pick it up, put it in their freezers.
Really?
Yeah.
And they sell it, and that's part of the ingredients for motion sickness tablets.
That's correct.
Because I understand how they work. What it does is there's a liquid inside your inner ear, and it works like a spirit level, and it thickens it so that it doesn't move around as much.
Oh, I don't know about that, but yeah, that's what we made.
And you made it?
We used to, yeah. I no longer make it now.
What do you do now?
Oh, I work on a chook farm.
Okay.
But I've got another story for you.
Yeah.
These teenage drinkers, as soon as they turn 18, the first thing they do is they go out nightclubbing.
Yes.
On their birthday. When I was a bartender, they'd come in and they'd say, I'd say, when do you turn 18? They'd say, oh, 11 o'clock. And I'd say, well, sit in the corner, come back at 11 o'clock and I'll serve you a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd start cracking up laughing and say, well, if the bouncers will let you in, I'll serve you.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a prank.
Well, yeah, it's the date that matters. I don't think it's the time that matters, is it?
No, it isn't, but they don't know that.
Well, there you go. Thank you, Steve.
No worries.
Yeah, I know it was a joke, Jess. It just wasn't a very good one. It wasn't told particularly well. That's all I'm saying. Jimmy, hello. Do you know what else is throwing me tonight? I've got the wrong glasses on. I've got plus twos, and I'm usually 1.5, and it's throwing me completely out.
Is it affecting your voice? This is a very vocal job.
Yeah, that's true. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, how you going?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Yeah, it's good. I used to love a dish my mum used to make. It was called devil kidneys. It's like kidneys cooked in a Worcestershire gravy, a bit of spice, soaked on toast. And I used to love it to death. And then one day as I was chowing into a piece of kidney, my mother reminded me that they're actually pea processing plants. From that moment onwards, every time I had a kidney, I could just taste pea. So I've never been able to eat it since that day.
I can't eat kidney. Never have, never will. I've always hated it.
Really? Oh,
yeah, I've always hated it. It sort of popped like a little balloon, doesn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, it does.
Yuck.
That pop you're talking about, it's exactly what happened. Right as my mum said, oh, they just taste like pea. And, of course, I just felt like I had a mouthful of pea from that moment onwards. And I have not I've been able to touch them ever since.
Yeah, we for a while had a Dial and Angel live-in housekeeper. And part of their job was to cook. And we had this one housekeeper who cooked steak and kidney pie. And I remember this kidney popping in my mouth, and I just hated the taste. I hated the texture. I hated the pot. And I refused to eat it. And I was told I wasn't allowed to leave the table until I'd finished my dinner. And I sat there till midnight. And I was eventually let off the hook.
Back in the day, you used to cop a fork across the ear if you didn't eat your Brussels sprouts and the like. Yeah, back in those days.
Oh, but kidney, I can't eat it. I can't eat it.
Yeah. Haven't been able since that day. And things like lamb's fry and all those sorts of awful products, same sorts of things.
Well, lamb's fry is funny. I don't mind that. That's lamb's brains.
Yeah, I'm thinking more of the liver. I think you get the liver lamb's fry, which again must be the Scottish influence. Used to have it in a Worcestershire gravy. It made it quite bearable, but yeah, the texture and the popping and then when you get past the Worcestershire flavour, you do start to taste the organic nature of it.
Yeah, there are some things from my childhood that have put me off for life.
Oh, did you ever have tripe?
Never had it. No, but I can't even look at it.
Yeah, coming from a Scottish family, it was a staple meal for us. It was bloody awful.
Yeah, yeah.
No good.
You see, that were the days when you didn't waste anything.
No, that's true. And back in those days, things like lamb shanks and stuff, they were the offcuts.
I was just about to say lamb shanks were cheap. Were cheap. Now they're gourmet, and they.
Oh, exactly right.
And have you seen some fancy butchers? They French trim them. Have you seen that?
No, I can't say I have.
I was wondering, they cut the ends off. It's all anyway. They're very fancy now.
They certainly are, and very expensive when you go to restaurants and the like. So
I know. Slow cooked lamb shanks.
There's a restaurant up near where I live in Wood End in Victoria, and it's they cook the most amazing lamb shanks. I'm not much of a lamb shank eater, but these ones are absolutely amazing.
Yeah, no, I love them. We used to always fight over it. Dad always got the lamb shank.
Yeah, got the bone. That was the fight, the bone.
And with roast pork, there was always a fight over the crackling.
Yes.
So what we did when I left home and got married and we had children, we would buy lamb shanks and crackling.
just the shanks and crackling, nothing else.
Yeah. So that everyone got a shank and everyone got a bit of crackling.
Yeah, perfect.
You can buy sheets of crackling at the supermarket.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, okay. Yeah. They actually encourage you to put that when you cook a leg of pork or something, actually encourage you to put that on separately and cook it separately now. So yeah, it's very popular. Pure fat.
My butcher told me the trick to doing perfect pork crackling was to pour boiling water straight from the kettle over the top of it, which opened the pores of the skin, and then you rub it completely dry with a clean tea towel and rub salt into it.
Yeah, that's what my butcher says, very similar thing as well. And you put your seasoning in there as well at the same time. Works out pretty tasty. Love me a bit of pork.
Oh, thanks for your call, Jimmy.
Thanks so much. See you later.
133353 is the number. This is the Night Shift in Triple M around Australia. Wednesday morning, hump day. This is Powderfinger. Tom's been waiting on for ages. Sorry, Tom, good morning to you.
Oh, how you going?
Yeah, good, thank you, Tom.
Two things I'd like to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm a truck driver, so I see a lot of idiots on the road. And I have a lot of close calls too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are the worst drivers? Can you possibly slot them into a category? Is it young people? Is it middle-aged men, as this new survey would suggest? Who are the worst?
A lot of them are P-platers and foreigners that don't know how to drive over here. I see a lot of female P-platers with their phone in their lap texting.
Yeah, I see that too.
I see it almost every night, a couple of times a night. And then you'll get, I don't want to mention any nationalities, but...
Well, let's not then. There's no name. You think people who by their appearance are obviously new to this country, they don't know the rules.
That's right. And
I see it too. And it is, in my opinion, one particular category as well, but you're not allowed to do that. But by the very nature of where we work, there are a lot of people of that nationality here, and honestly, sometimes you just wonder, what are they doing?
Oh, it's just, and I have a lot of close calls with them. I do a lot of highway work, so it's they'll pull out in front of you doing less than what the speed limit is, and they're just oblivious to you coming up behind them in a truck. And I'm carting 63 ton, and it's a lot to pull up when somebody decides to do 80 or even 70 when you're doing 100 k's an hour.
Yeah, but people don't, on the whole, don't know how to deal with heavy vehicles on the roads. And until I started doing this radio program, I didn't either. But now I take extra special care to be aware. And I understand how long it takes you guys to pull up now and not to try and overtake you when you're going around a corner. All that sort of stuff. A lot of people just ignore it. They very rarely come into contact with people like yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And I get it every night. And I have close calls almost every night when I'm driving.
Mm.
Yeah, and it just makes you wonder if it's worth if it's actually worth doing the job or not.
Really? You've come close to giving it away, have you?
Yeah, a couple of times. Yeah.
Yeah, geez. Yeah, road toll statistics are showing that middle-aged men are the deadliest drivers. This is in New South Wales anyway, and are involved in more fatal crashes than P-platers or even young revheads. And the New South Wales Roads Minister, Melinda Pavey, has called for the wives and girlfriends and partners who sit next to male drivers to speak up and to save lives. She said it's time to speak up or get out of the car. Well, how about we send a strong message to the drivers? Pull your head in. Obey the speed limit. Obey the rules. Last year, the number of female passengers killed in road smashes increased by 72%. And of the 515 drivers involved in fatal crashes in New South Wales last year, 408 were men. The majority of those male drivers were aged between 30 and 49. And I'm with you, Tom. Whenever I see someone doing something stupid, usually it's a P-player.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
all right, Tom. Thanks for your call.
And one other thing too was the hardest job.
Yeah? What do you reckon it is?
Being a parent with two little kids, but one of them's disabled.
Hmm. Challenging, yeah.
It's very challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah. My youngest daughter, she's got Down syndrome.
Right.
And from day dot, it's been very hard for her.
How old is she?
She's three.
Three.
Yeah. Just turned three.
I have been told by parents of Down syndrome that they can be very rewarding kids too.
They are. She's a beautiful kid.
There are different degrees though, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's at the mild end of it, but she's had a rough trot with surgeries and stuff like that, and she's still going through them. The first week that she was born, she had to have a blood transfusion.
That's tough.
And within 2 months, she had to have open heart surgery.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What is the life expectancy of people with Down syndrome? Once upon a time, you never saw Down syndrome people much past 30 or 40, but now you do.
We were told that the life expectancy was about 30.
30.
But I've heard of them being over 50.
Yeah, you see a lot of elderly.
Yeah.
People with Down syndrome. So obviously treatments have improved.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep.
Did you know that your daughter was going to be born with Down syndrome before she was born, or did you find out at birth?
We found out at 27 weeks. They didn't pick it up in the ultrasounds, so we didn't know until it was too late. Whether we would have terminated or not is another thing, and you know what? I'm glad we didn't.
Yeah.
Because she's just the best little kid. Challenging at times, and like we're always going to have that.
There is a test for Down syndrome. Where they extract the fluid from the placenta while the baby is in the womb. And
yes.
What's that called?
I can't remember what that's called, but we didn't find out about that and until it was too late to do that test.
Yes. Oh God, it's on the tip of my tongue. And there's an argument as to whether or not that test should be done, because then obviously if it's done early enough, you can decide whether or not to terminate. And a lot of people, when they discover that their child is going to be born Down syndrome, do decide to terminate.
Yes.
And there are people who, like yourself, who are raising a Down syndrome child, and the child, yes, has its problems, but also has many, many, many rewards attached to it, and can go to mainstream school and can enjoy a rich life, can work, can make a difference. Most people that I've met and spoken to are absolutely delighted that they didn't terminate and that they've raised this child.
Yeah, that's right. Like
amniocentesis, that's it.
Yes, that's the word.
That's the word. It's an amniocentesis, yeah.
Yeah. My wife was struggling for the first 2 years. She just couldn't cope. And now she's, my daughter stepped it up a little.
Hello?
Hello, you there?
Yeah, you just dropped out, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, my wife, she's struggling for a while at first. She couldn't deal with it.
Couldn't deal with it?
No, it was, I think it was just the shock of having a disabled child at the time.
And maybe coupled with postnatal depression?
Yeah, yep.
Is she okay? Is your wife all right now?
It's taken her at least, it's probably taken her about 2 years.
Mm.
She is a lot better now. Some days she has, well, she has her days, but
I'll tell you what I'll do, Tom. I'd like to hear from parents of children with a disability, and I'd like to ask them about, yes, the challenges, but what are the rewards?
Just she's always smiling.
Yeah,
then that's the biggest thing. She's always happy
and affectionate.
I'll ask for a kiss off her. She'll give me 100 of them.
Yeah.
That's just what they're like. Mm. When she shows her aggression, sometimes within a couple of, not even a couple of minutes of her being aggressive, she's all over you, kissing you and just, but like we're always going to have our issues with her. Like she still can't walk yet. She can't talk. So we communicate with her, well, she communicates back to us through sign. So we've had to learn all that to teach her as well. So, yeah, it is pretty challenging.
Hopefully rewarding as well.
Oh, it's very rewarding.
There you are. Yeah. All right. Tom, thank you for being so honest. Good luck.
No worries. Thank you.
Have you got help?
Yeah, we get help, but we don't ask for help because we're not like that, and we're trying to treat her as a normal child as we can. So we get the NDIS and that, which helps out a lot, and she goes to appointments every week, and we get a little bit, but we try not to. We don't ask for a lot.
She's three.
And she's only 3, yeah.
And she can't walk yet. So she's a slow developer, but when she does develop, are you going to send her to a mainstream school or are you going to send her to a special school?
We were hoping to send her to a mainstream school with her older sister. We just found out it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. So we may have to try and find a school that's suited for her.
Yeah, a special needs school.
And there's not many of them around.
No. Well, maybe there's someone listening that's in the same boat, someone that's been through this.
Yeah.
Stay listening. You never know who'll ring in.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay, well, good luck, Tom. Stay in touch.
No worries, thank you.
Thanks for your conversation. Thanks for your company.
No worries, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah. Paul, hello.
Hey, Luke, how you going, mate? Sorry, mate, dropped out there.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, Paul. Yeah, I don't know what happened. Anyway, you're back. You wanted to talk about tough jobs.
Yeah, mate, yeah, I was. Well, the tough job was the emergency service guys. But, got on the discussion of, with the, here on the news today, that the average cancer patient is forking out $60,000 or having to try and find $60,000 for their own treatment costs. Because there's a lot of drugs that aren't put on the PBS to help them.
Mm.
We're a fairly small community where we are here in Gladstone in central Queensland, and there's quite a few social motorcycle groups in the area, and quite often we're called upon to try and get together as charity rides to raise some money to help some of these people who are terminal to help raise some money to pay for some drugs for them to try and make their life a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
And it's pretty heart-wrenching when you realise that our taxpayers' dollars aren't covering to help these people have a more comfortable, basically, end of life.
Yeah, but we can give nearly half a billion dollars to the Great Barrier Reef, and we can give $4.4 billion to foreign aid every year.
Yeah, yeah, mate. It's sad. And, you know, like a couple of months ago, met a gentleman who's terminal with prostate cancer.
All right.
And he was pushing very hard to get the word out there, and the local community got together, and we did a bit of a ride and passed the hat around and got enough money to pay for one script for him, which was just over $600 for the script. We actually got together a bit more than that. But and it was just sad to see that, you know, that he'd been suffering in pain. And it just seems strange to us that here in Australia, if you leave an animal suffer in pain and you don't do the right thing by it, take it to a vet and get it put down or get treatment, that you can actually go to jail. And yet, for some reason, you know, we're allowing these poor people that are having it really hard and tough at the time to go through immense pain.
Yeah.
And some of the treatments, speaking to this gentleman, like when he has chemo and everything else, it makes him violently ill, so he throws up and nausea and everything else. So his doctor prescribed medicinal marijuana oil for him.
All right, yeah.
And he's one of only about 9 people that have had it here in Queensland. But he had to go through his doctor. It took 3 months for the doctor to get all the paperwork through to be able to give him the script. And then once the script was issued, the gentleman had to be cleared himself to be able to have that medicine as well, which was another 3 months. So it was a 6-month track just to get the pain relief for him. What it actually does to him, just to sort of help people understand what medicinal marijuana does for terminal cancer patients, is it actually helps them to, in a few ways, to help them to sleep. It also helps them to gain an appetite, something that they lose when they are on chemotherapy and radiation.
Yeah, yeah. They feel seriously nauseous all the time.
Yeah. So the medicinal marijuana from the patients the people that we've helped is along the lines of it actually gives them an opportunity to sleep, eat, and be pain free.
Yeah. Why don't we just jump into this? Why the wait? Why? Let's just do it.
Yeah. I mean, like these people are terminal that are given the medicinal marijuana oil prescription. So their outcome is, of course, end of life. So why are we making it so hard for these people to have a comfortable end of life?
Yeah.
You know?
We talked about voluntary euthanasia. We talk about it from time to time in this program. And yesterday we talked about the ACT and the Northern Territory arguing for their right to be able to legislate and put into practice voluntary euthanasia under their own steam.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gone through the Parliament in Victoria, but still nothing. What are your thoughts on voluntary euthanasia?
Having the experience of dealing around the people that we do the charity work for, some want it, some don't. Myself, I wouldn't want to be getting to the state that I'd have to be looked at as a vegetable type thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd rather, if I knew it was coming, I'd rather have the control myself.
Yeah. You at least the right to make that choice. And if you can see that you're being a burden to your family and causing them distress because of your condition and you're in enormous pain, what did you say? You said it beautifully. If you have an animal that you can't feed and can't look after, and if you let it deteriorate, you can go to jail for cruelty.
Yeah, that's it. If the animal's been hurt, hit by a car or something like that, you don't get it treatment, you can go to jail or be fined for not putting that animal's life before, before dollars type thing.
Oh, he's done it again. That's what happened last time. Look, Paul, if you're still listening, you have communicated your point brilliantly. And I hear exactly what you're saying. Maybe we can try again, but you've just dropped out again, and I think it is your end. But thank you very much for your call, and please, congratulations, and keep up that good work that you and your motorbike mates are doing in Gladstone. 133353 is the telephone number. I'm just going to get Jess to come in very quickly. We've had a lot of people who have been inquiring as to what's happened to Chris, who rang me, I reckon it must have been about 5 weeks ago. When Chris rang, was that before you went away on your holiday?
Yeah, it was about 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah. And it was just a call out of the blue about a bloke who listens to the program regularly. He actually said he remembers our first night on air. And he sounded quite cheery when he rang, but he dropped the bombshell that he has been diagnosed with liver cancer and will be lucky to get 12 to 16 months life left. And he's heard me rabbit on about that HZ Kingswood station wagon I sold all those years ago and how I would love another one. And he told us on air that he has a Holden Sandman, which is the panel van, it's windowless, that he and his pop were going to do up together. When his pop's passed, his wife's passed, and his dad's gone, and he has no family. And he offered to give me the car on air. You remember that?
Yeah.
And whilst I'm hugely flattered and I would love the vehicle, I can't accept that. That's just wrong. So I've been in contact with Chris, and because of his health, he's been laying a bit low. But I got a text message from him at 5:54 on Saturday night, 5:54 p.m. And while it's a text, it's a personal thing, I'll just roughly give the listeners an idea of what he said. You've read it, Jess. Hi, Luke. And there's a little happy face emoji. Sorry I haven't been in contact. My health is one thing. But I just lost my best mate, my friend and soulmate of 14 years. So me doing it tough at the moment. But the good thing is that I have you and Jess. You and Jess start when I finish, unfortunately. The Sandy, that's the Sandman, hasn't been even in my mind with losing such a huge part of my life. F, beep, 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 K, I love your support, Luke. The only thing is I have is my mum, and she is 75. Without you and Jess, I don't have nothing. You guys are my life. By the way, the Sandy has been left to you in my will. I could not think to anyone that deserves that car and would love it more than you, Luke. And he goes on. It's embarrassing what he says. He loves the show, basically.
Such a beautiful message.
What I am trying to do, and it's now officially a work in progress, we're trying to get this done, is I want to get this car restored to its former glory so that he can drive it. Because this was a project that he and his pop were going to do. And they never got round to it. So what I want to do, I can't accept the car and I wouldn't dream of it. So what I want to do is I want to restore it for Chris. So we're working on it. It's a work in progress. But to all those people who wondered where we're going with it, it has taken a while because Chris has had other things in his mind, his best mate and Chris's health. So you read the message. What did you make?
So beautiful. Mm. So touching. Mm. We get a lot of feedback like that. And honestly, it's so humbling.
Mm.
And we love what we do, Lukey, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we talk a lot of smack, but...
Yeah, we do.
But deep down, we love that we can reach out to people. We're invited into so many people's homes every single day.
I'm hoping that Chris, if we get this, or if or when we get this car completely restored and handed over to him so he can drive it and enjoy it, I hope he drives it for a long, long time. I'm hoping he's on a list for a liver transplant. Look, you never know, Jess. You live in hope. You live in hope.
You do. And after that phone call, we had a lot of people call in saying, mate, the doctor told me the same thing and here I am 6 years later.
That's it.
So there is hope. Of course there is.
Yeah. So that's the path that me and Jess are going down. Simon, my mate from the man cave, and Adam, we're getting behind this. And we can't say too much because we're relying on other people as well. But hopefully we'll have this car restored and delivered to Chris in pristine condition, so that he can drive the car that he and his pop should have been driving all this time. Okay, just an update. The Night Shift.
On Triple M.
Wednesday morning, downhill to the weekend, folks. 133353 is the telephone number. Tell us something we don't know. We love those calls. G'day, Ian. How are you?
Luke, how you going?
Ian, I'm very well. Are you all right?
Do you remember me?
Do I remember you? Give me a hint.
Oh, listen to the from the day, Doc, since you started.
Yeah, good on you.
I deliver papers in Harndorf in South Australia here. Pretty windy, cold place tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, so long-time listener, second-time caller.
So you've been listening since day one?
Yeah, and I rang you up once.
Yeah, what did we talk about?
A year and a half ago. How long have you been on now?
I can't remember. Jess, how long have we been on? How long have we been allowed to get away with the crap that we're doing here?
Luke!
Sorry.
Since December 2016, but I think it was the 15th.
Have you got a start date? Do we actually have an anniversary?
Yeah, I think it was the 15th.
Can you make sure?
Sure, let me confirm.
She thinks it was the 15th of December 2016.
2016.
Has it been that long?
What are we on now? Aren't we in 18?
We're in 18. Are you sure, Jess?
Today, August 18. So is that nearly 2 years December? Is that what you're saying?
Hang on. Let me ask the boss.
Yeah, it'll be 2 years this December. Hello, you just said year and a half.
2 years?
Yeah, I know. What? Year and a half, that's right. Yeah, I did. What are we in now? August.
Do you know what? Do you know what this means? This is absolute proof positive that management don't listen. that we've nearly lasted 2 years.
You're 4 months off 2 years, Luke.
I got it right. It was the week.
Yeah, you've disappeared.
I got the week right, 15th. So the Monday was the 12th. So it was Monday, the 12th of December, 2016.
Wow.
Long time.
All right, Jess, here's your next piece of homework. Rabbit, are you listening?
Oh, God, I should have acted like I didn't know. Yeah, go on.
How many shows is that?
I got to go, bye.
Oh, and are we going to be presented with a certificate?
I found the funniest one still, Luke, was getting bit off the subject here was with Softcock over there in Newcastle.
Oh, mate.
And you asked how they had a – is there a longer
What I was trying to ask was, did he come from a long line of Softcocks?
Yeah.
And I wanted to – and I couldn't get it out. I wanted to ask him if there were many – If there were many soft cocks in Newcastle.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's this guy's real his real name.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, that's right. It could have been a family there. You don't know, for sure.
Yeah.
But what I rang up, yeah, very touching there with the Sandman and all that.
I can't accept it. I can't accept
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know.
What I'm trying to do is get it done up and completely restored beautifully. So that he can drive it, so that he can drive it like his pop wanted him to.
That's right. It's all very touching with the cancer that he was diagnosed.
Liver cancer. But you know, there's liver hope. Cancer. There's people that survive it. You never know. We should.
Well, don't they do liver transplants on that? Or
sorry,
don't they do liver transplants on?
Yes.
On that, but they've got to have a donor or the right match.
Yeah, you've got to have the right match for any large organ. And people don't know this, but that's why there's such a wait. Because you think to yourself, hang on, people die every day. Why is there such a wait for organs? Well, those large organs, Ian, need a blood supply. So they're usually donated by people who are on life support. Do you understand?
Yeah, yeah.
And people don't know that. They think, hang on, people die every day. But those organs need a blood supply. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a blood donor, so I feel like I do something to the community, so other than deliver papers.
Are you an organ donor?
I'm not down on the licence, no.
Well,
I think I'll change that when they renew the licence, because I think I renewed it for 10 years, I think, last time, so...
Yeah, well, you see, unfortunately, you've got to opt into being an organ donor. I think you should have to opt out. I think every Australian should automatically be considered a potential organ donor. And if you feel strongly against it, well, then you go to the trouble to opt out. But I think it should be automatic that we all are.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many kids in that too that you can,
cancer that, you know, got a long life ahead of them, but they haven't got a life because they haven't got what they need.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And then I know a bloke. Are you ready for this, Ian? I know a bloke who, because he put an infected needle into his arm when he was young and stupid, experimenting with drugs, he got hepatitis C. Mm. In fact, I think he got A and C. Yeah. Anyway, he was told by doctors he should never, ever, ever, ever drink because his liver was gone. But he continued to drink. In fact, drank very, very heavily. So his liver was really stuffed. And he went for a job on, I think it was an ocean liner, as a chef. And he had to have a blood test in order to get this job. And, of course, it all showed up. And so he went on the waiting list for a liver transplant. Can you believe it? They found one for him, a perfect match. He had the liver transplant, and guess what?
Back on the drink.
He still drinks.
Yeah.
Now, imagine if you were the family of that donor.
Yeah. Not right, really, is it? No appreciation towards the, that could have gone to someone else that was going to look after it.
Yeah.
And live longer.
Yeah.
Now, Luke, what I rang up about, on Friday I was listening, you had a bloke from Standard Light, it wasn't Newcastle, it was in Mwillabar or somewhere in New South Wales. He had all these mining trucks all lined up because they couldn't get drivers.
That's right, yes.
Is it possible to get a number off you on to find out more about this?
Because you need a job, do you?
Well, I'm delivering papers, but I'd have a look at it for sure. I've got a truck licence, but...
Okay, yes, it was. Yeah, what was his name, Jess?
His name was Paul, and I have left him a message, so hopefully he'll get in touch with us. We've had so many inquiries.
Have you? Yeah. Because I'm, to have that. Look, I'm like one of these other, I'm like the other people, Luke. Like, I've spent $1,000 there about 10 years ago to get in the mines. I got a white card. I did my first aid course. I had to pay for that. That's about $200. That only lasts for 3 years. I spent $1,000 on tickets and, tried hard, couldn't get in everywhere. I got told I've got to do, put money in and get it. And I got a bit dejected in the finish with the mines. I thought, oh, bugger the mines.
Yeah. Well, look, Jess does have a number. She's left messages. Look, you don't know. This bloke might not be fair income. You know, we take everybody at face value on this program. But stay there and give Jess your details, and if he gets back to us, we'll give him your number, okay?
Yeah, that'd be good. And just quickly...
Hang on a second. Yes?
I was just going to say as well, Luke, if anyone else has jobs going in the mines and has a similar message like Paul, let us know, email me, and if there's a website, because if someone calls in and says this, I can't give out your personal number, so if there's a website or somewhere to apply, please let us know.
There you are. See, we're trying. Yeah.
Right, so what does that mean, Luke? So do I still leave him my number or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, yeah.
After?
When I'm finished with it. Are you done?
Yeah, no, just quickly, I was out doing the papers tonight and I'm going into Coles because, we do all the shops as well.
Yeah.
Can I say just hello to my toothless mate? He just lost his front two teeth. His name's Alec.
How did he lose his teeth?
He fell off a push bike.
Yeah, that'll do it.
When he was only a kid. Yeah. And he's getting their screw-ins now. He's probably listening.
Okay.
And I call him Toothless Tom, but, yeah, he's managed to the ones, the plates that you put in? He went into Sydney for a bit of a party and he woke up with no teeth. He's lost them. He come back to work with that no front two teeth and I thought, bloody hell, Alex, what have you been doing? You've been in a fight or something?
Yeah.
He said, no, I lost my teeth. He got had a few drinks. He said, I had a few drinks. And he woke up without his front tooth. They put a plate on because, yeah, he fell off a bike or something when he was a young fella.
Wow. My dad had missing teeth, but he had falsies on a plate. And there was two at the front, then he had one, and then he missed one. And when he took his plate out and smiled, my Christ, it looked scary. It completely changed his face. He had his teeth knocked out. He got dumped. Surfing.
Oh, yeah.
And it really, as a party trick, I'd have friends come over and he'd turn around and take his plate out and then turn around and smile at you. Oh, it gave me nightmares.
Yeah, but quickly going back to the dumpster diving, there was a couple in there, like I've seen them in there a lot. What they do is these big bins have got probably good stuff inside them. And as we drop the papers off, I've seen them there quite often. I just wondered what the rule was on that. They call it dumpster diving. They said we're dumpster diving for not the salvos. They're here in South Australia. They've got a different name. I won't even name it. But they go in and then they sell. I think they sell it or give it to the homeless.
Yeah, and there are plenty of individuals who dumpster dive because the big supermarket chains throw out really good food. But apparently it's stealing.
Big bins, Luke, and they stink. Inside that bin, they stink.
Mm, but the food is sealed, you see, and it hasn't passed its use-by date. So there are people there who'll put up with the stink to go and get it because it's good food that hasn't gone off.
In the middle of the night, there was
yes.
And he said to me, the bugger said to me, I said, hey, I don't know whether you should be in here doing this. And he got the wings up, and I told him, I said, look, I've seen two girls coming out the bin one night. I said, I thought it was a giant rat. And I said, that can't be right. And it was a human, but she had dreadlocks. This girl had dreadlocks as she was coming out the bin.
Yeah, well, that plenty of people do it because the food in there is more than just edible. It's good stuff. And they throw it out. God, we waste a lot. We waste a hell of a lot. In France, did you know that supermarkets and restaurants have to, by law, donate leftovers to charity? Not a bad idea. Listen, Ian, stay right there, and Jess will get your details, and we'll try and hunt down this bloke, Paul, who reckons there's jobs for truck drivers in the mines. This is the Night Shift on Triple M. What else is happening in the world today? I mentioned that this provocative first speech to Parliament from Senator Fraser Anning is ruffling feathers everywhere. He is a Katter Australian Party senator, and he said that he has praise for the White Australia policy. He's been swiftly condemned as vile and bile by his parliamentary opponents, and it's only a matter of time until he's described as racist. He says, we as a nation are entitled to insist that those who are allowed to come here predominantly reflect the historic European Christian composition of Australian society. And this is what he told the upper house yesterday. He said, those who come here need to assimilate and integrate. So far, so good. You would agree with that, wouldn't you? But this is where it gets tricky. He said, migrants should embrace the English language, tick, and Australian values, tick. He says, cultural diversity is undermining social cohesion. Ethnocultural diversity. He said it's been allowed to rise to dangerous levels in many suburbs. And we've seen those street gangs in Melbourne. Gangs predominantly, allegedly, made up of Sudanese young men who are either born here or came here as refugees. Their parents certainly came here as refugees. Running amok. But as I said, if you ask, I reckon if you're in the pub and you asked around, where do most of our migrants come from? People immediately knee-jerk and they'll say, oh, they're Muslims. They come from Muslim countries. That's wrong. The majority of our migrants come from India. This is skilled migrants. India. England comes second. China comes third, just under England. South Africa is fourth, and fifth is the Philippines. So I wonder if those figures surprise you. 133353 is the telephone number. What else is happening? Oh, this shocking CCTV footage you'll see today. It shows the moment a car swerved and hit at least 10 cyclists and pedestrians before smashing into barriers outside Britain's Houses of Parliament. Did you see all that? The suspect A man in his late 20s was arrested by armed police after being pulled from a silver Ford Fiesta hatchback. Three people were injured in the incident, which the Metropolitan Police Service is treating as a terrorist incident. CCTV shows the car swerving on the wrong side of the road, the wrong way down the road, before veering into pedestrians. It happened at 7:37 a.m. local time. London's Metropolitan Police Service said that the man, aged in his late 20s, was arrested on suspicion of terrorist offences. You're listening to The Night Shift around Australia and around the world on the Triple M network. G'day, Barry. How are you, buddy?
No worries, Luke. Yourself?
I'm good, mate. Are you travelling at the moment?
Yes, I am. Yep.
Tell me.
Hands free, of course.
Yep. Go on.
Yeah. Oh, Luke, I was just about the home birth. I delivered my youngest daughter at home on the bed where she was conceived. We walked out of the car, and my wife said, I can't make it. So we rushed back into the room, and one scream out popped the head, two screams out popped the whole body. It was like taking a chest mark on a wet day low to the ground. Effectively.
Oh, God, you're a funny bloke. You are a funny... Say that again. Delivering... Was it a boy or a girl?
It was a girl, yeah.
Say that again. Delivering your daughter was like what?
It was like taking a chest mark on a wet day low to the ground. That's what it was. I sort of caught her as she popped out. Second scream out, popped the whole body.
Oh,
I got a shock of my life. Oh, and you couldn't believe it. Luke, I had the ambulance on the phone at the time. I don't know how the heck they didn't hear all my swear words, because you can imagine the shock. And the next thing I know, bang, bang, bang on the door. So, of course, you know, like there's a whole bunch of gush all over the bed. And I'm holding on to my daughter with the umbilical cord.
Oh,
so
man.
I put her back on my wife's belly and run out and open the door, and it was the ambulance. I said, how the hell did you find me? I didn't even give you the address.
So how did they find you?
Well, anyone who rings Triple O, your number's tracked.
Of course. So you didn't even make it down to the end of the driveway?
No, didn't even get into the car.
And she said, I think something's happening.
Yeah. She said, I'll never make it. And the amazing thing was that the ambulance people came in, and the bloke said, oh, you want to cut the umbilical cord? I said, mate, I think I've seen enough today. I'll leave that to the expert.
Hey, listen, have you seen the footage of this woman giving birth in the bathtub?
And do you know what? I've got to be honest with you. That was not by choice. Now, as you know, if there had a complication, I would have been stuffed.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm asking you, Barry. I know it's bad reception. Have you seen the footage of the mother giving birth in the bathtub?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay, it's on our... Jess, is it on our Facebook page now?
It is. A lot of people... mixed responses, actually.
I thought that would be the case, because there are a lot of people who think home birthing is a really good thing. But this woman is in the bath, Barry.
Yep.
And she's there with her husband, partner, or whoever. And he actually grabs hold of the baby under the water. The next thing you see, a dog's head poking into the shot.
Yeah.
There is not one sign of a medical professional, a midwife. There's no machine that goes bing. They're there at home in the bath. And this is a growing trend. And they're called mummy bloggers. And these popular mummy bloggers, they're new age people, right? They most of them live around Nimbin, I'm tipping. And they're questioning traditional medicine. You know, these are the anti-vax people.
Yeah,
these are people who don't think that vaccination's important. They push alternative health treatments like natural flu shots. What the hell that is, I have no idea. But they don't want doctors or midwives anywhere near them when they give birth. And you'll see in this video that's on our Facebook page, there she is. It's not a spontaneous thing like you. It was a planned thing, from what I understand, and a dog's head pokes itself.
Yeah.
And one of Australia's leading obstetricians, Dr. Michael Gannon, is concerned. And when a baby's born, its first reaction, its first instinct is to take a big deep breath.
Yeah.
What would have happened if this baby had taken that breath underwater?
drowned, probably. Yeah, yeah. I can't understand it, Luke. You know, the people, what they don't understand is, as you know, Luke, that you're playing with a human life, and you cannot take risks with that human life. It's your responsibility to make sure that human life comes into the world alive and healthy. And you know yourself, Luke, any problems, and they're stuffed, you can't do anything. You know, what do you do? Call the ambulance, and by the time the ambulance gets there, especially, imagine living in Sydney, Luke, calling the ambulance for the western suburbs, mate, could be half an hour.
It could be half an hour, yeah, or care flight comes. But look, if people want a home birth, well, that's their decision, but they're also making a really important decision for an unborn baby.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, if you're going to home birth, surely you would have a professional there, wouldn't you?
Wouldn't you? Surely. You know yourself, Luke. You know, they could almost be tried for manslaughter if complications arise.
I wonder.
And the child dies.
I wonder.
You could technically say manslaughter, couldn't you?
I don't know. I don't think it's been tested, but that's a very, very valid point.
You could imagine the nasty mother-in-law who's looking forward to the grandchild coming, or even the parents, and saying, you know, what the heck are you doing? You know, you've got a hospital, you pay Medicare. I mean, let's face it, Luke, you know yourself, thanks to Medicare, and of course thanks to Gough Whitlam for that, we pay a small percentage out of our wage. But let's face it, you rock up to the hospital, emergency, whatever, you won't even see a bill.
I just don't understand. You're about to bring into the world the most precious thing, and yet you're being so flippant about it. You want to be all new wave and man bun about it. I'll get complaints now. You watch, and you want to give birth in your own bathtub with a dog poking his head into the frame.
Yeah, yeah.
And not a medical professional within Cooee, let alone the machine that goes bing.
Imagine if the dog does a bit of a dribble.
Oh, stop it.
There's a bit of giardia or whatever it is. These dogs carry.
Thank you, Barry.
Thanks, Luke. Have a good night, mate. Good day.
You have a good day too, mate.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. 133353, what are your thoughts? Is it irresponsible or is it none of our business? Has anyone asked the baby how the baby feels? This is the Night Shift from Triple M.